And so Jesus Christ comes and is the last great kingdom on earth and the greatest of all. He destroys man's kingdoms and sets up his own permanent kingdom. That's verse number 44, which we just read. In the days of these kings, which ones? These 10 that have assembled themselves under the reign of the Antichrist, whoever they are, whatever 10 countries, whatever 10 alliances, whatever 10 unions have been put together, we don't know who all they are. But we see it starting to come together. In those days, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed.
Hi, and welcome to Redeemed, a podcast by Pastor Wes Gunther of Cedar Hill Baptist Church in Dillsburg, Pennsylvania. Thank you for joining us today.
Daniel 1, starting in verse 8. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. I am not sick. I've convinced myself of that, but I have a little bit of cough every time I get up here to talk. In Daniel chapter 1, verses 8 and 9, we see this first test. Here's Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They are being trained and being prepared. They're being prepared to be sitting in positions of authority under Nebuchadnezzar. And we see that unfold in chapter number 2, which we're going to get into. But in chapter number 1, they have this first test. As they're getting prepared, as they're getting trained, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, they're beginning to learn the customs, they're learning the language, they're learning how to conduct themselves, they're going to stand before the king. They have a lot to learn. These are young people moved into a new empire, under a new king, under new customs. They have a lot to learn, and they're being trained to do so. They are bright and intelligent, academically so. More importantly, these four are singled out in the Word of God because they have faith in God. And so spiritually, they are astute as well. And we see that unfold over these next couple of chapters. So here in Daniel chapter number 1, the first test, there's a problem with the food, right? And we talked about that briefly a couple weeks ago. Some of you continued to talk to me about that even afterwards. So now that we're teaching it, let's look into it just a little more detail. Why wouldn't Daniel eat the king's meat? Well, a number of things. And if you read through all the different historical records, if you read through all the different commentaries on this, there seem to be three things that kind of rise to the top as to why he wouldn't eat this meat. Number one, the way it would have been presented, and that is it would have been offered to idols. And so there's a religious aspect to the way that the king's meat was given, presented, used ahead of time for these idol worship and so forth. And so that would have been obviously a red flag or a problem for Daniel. Number two is probably maybe the way it was prepared. And I talked about that a couple weeks ago. The way it was prepared or the lack thereof would have been a problem. But probably number three, most importantly, and I didn't say this a couple weeks ago, but many of you brought this up, and you're right, and the commentaries say this too. It was probably the meat itself that was a problem, and that is that the law clearly outlined what meat they were allowed to eat and what they weren't allowed to eat. And so, at the bottom line, it wasn't kosher. Maybe this first night they brought out, you know, pork spare ribs or something, you know, something that was clearly not something they were allowed to eat. You know, they didn't eat those meats that were of cloven foot, right? So they didn't eat pork. They wouldn't have eaten something exotic. And this is, we don't have to guess at this. We're going to see this in chapter 2. This is one of the greatest, and according to God himself, the greatest of human empires in human history. right? Not to give it away, but in the next chapter, we're going to see the head of gold is Babylon. So this was an important empire, a high-end empire. As they've done excavating and research and historical things, they have found, I mean, Babylon had things far advanced other countries of the time. You know, the gardens, the walls, they had some running water. They had things that other civilizations didn't have for centuries to come. But Babylon was able to do that. Remember, Nebuchadnezzar going out, finding the best and the brightest from these other countries and bringing them in. So we see the results of that. The results of that is Babylon was a high-end empire. They had lots of stuff. They were far advanced. And because of that, they no doubt had not only food that would not have been on a Jewish menu, but they probably had some food that was somewhat exotic as well, right? And you go to some of these fancier places or high-end places, who knows, what are they eating? Camel, you know, alligator, you know, snake, I don't know. We don't know at all, but they would have probably introduced something more exotic, and they certainly would have had some type of, they may have just brought out bacon, you know. Yeah, yummy. I'm with you, right? You and I would say yes. But to Daniel and to his, you know, friends, this is a problem, right? They can't eat that at that point, right? We understand we are allowed to eat that today, right? That's the vision that Peter had in the book of Acts. There's no problem with eating that today. Thank goodness we can eat bacon, right? Because I like bacon. I like pork products. But Daniel wouldn't have eaten that. And so here's Daniel looking, I don't know if he's looking at a menu. He's looking at what's been served already. He heard what's been served, or he knows what's coming tonight. One way or the other, Daniel's like, can't do it. Not doing it. The second part there is the wine that's given. And so no doubt, again, this would have been a high-end wine, which no doubt had a high-end alcohol level. And Daniel and his friends said, we can't drink that. You know, these are problems for us. We've got to keep ourselves pure according to God's command, so we're not touching the king's meat, and we're not touching this alcohol that's being served tonight. We're not doing it. And so they made the deal there with the keeper of these young men, the guy who's training them. They made the deal, to eat this more vegetarian-type diet. And God allowed within 10 days for their countenance to look better. And so I think God did something special in their lives. God did something with the man who was observing them that he saw a noticeable difference and allowed them to continue to eat the way that they were. There's been some talk. Did he then make everybody eat that? I don't know. I don't think the Bible's clear on that. But he allowed them to eat that which they wanted to eat. He saw that it was better for them, and he allowed that to happen. This was God working in their lives in a special way. They stepped out on faith, right? They had no rapport in the bank yet. As Daniel's life unfolds, he's going to build rapport with all these kings. He's going to build a great relationship with them all. He's going to be able to do all kinds of amazing things within the empire under different kings. He has no rapport yet. He hasn't even been trained yet. But Daniel's going to make a stand, and God's going to honor him and his friends for that. Daniel chapter 2. I want to talk about this dream. Daniel chapter 2. Let me read down through a little bit of it. I know it's, let me see, the chapter's 49 verses, and time's going to get away from us. So let me read what is applicable here, and then we're going to talk about it. In Daniel chapter 2, in the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, so it's early in Nebuchadnezzar's reign, looks like he, much like Alexander the Great and some of the other ones, I think we saw this with some of the Roman emperors as well, their dad passed away, they get called from the battlefield back to the position of leadership. So Nebuchadnezzar, while he had been out taking over countries, is now sitting on the throne. And so he's in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar. So early in Daniel's life in Babylon as well, but we don't know the exact time frame. Nebuchadnezzar dreamed dreams wherewith his spirit was troubled and his sleep brake from him. The king commanded to call the magicians, astrologers, sorcerers, Chaldeans, for to show the king his dreams. So they came, and they stood before the king. The king said, I have dreamed a dream. My spirit was troubled to know the dream. Then spake the Chaldeans to the king in Syriac, O king, live forever. I understand that's Aramaic, just so you know what that is. It's Aramaic. O king, live forever. Tell thy servants the dream, and we will show the interpretation. The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, the thing is gone from me. If ye will not make known unto me the dream with the interpretation thereof, ye shall be cut in pieces, and your houses shall be made a dunghill. But if you show the dream and the interpretation thereof, you shall receive of me gifts, rewards, and great honor. Therefore, show me the dream and the interpretation thereof. They answered again and said, let the king tell his servants the dream, and then we will show the interpretation of it. And the king answered and said, I know of certainty that ye would gain the time, because ye see the thing is gone from me. If ye will not make known unto me the dream, there is but one decree for you, for ye have prepared lying and corrupt words to speak before me till the time he changed. Therefore, tell me the dream. I shall know that ye can show me the interpretation thereof. The Chaldeans answered before the king and said, there is not a man upon the earth. That will come back to bite them, right? God has a man prepared for such a time as this. There's not a man upon the earth that can show the king matter. Therefore, there is no king, lord, nor ruler that asked such things at any magician or astrologer or Chaldean. It's a rare thing that the king requireth. There is none other that can show it before the king except the gods whose dwelling is not with flesh. True words, they said there. One and only true God will reveal it. Verse 12. For this cause the king was angry, very furious, and commanded to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. The decree went forth that the wise men should be slain, and they sought Daniel and his fellows to be slain. But we don't really talk about this particular instance, but here's Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They're in training. We don't know how far they are into this, but they've been in it for a while. They're getting prepared to start to work for the king. And now, all of a sudden, they find out, oh, we've been sentenced to death. Great, you know. Things couldn't look any gloomier. Think of all they'd been through. They, again, taken out from other homes, left their country, dragged down to Babylon, put into service for the king. They've already had a go-round about the food that they're to eat, and praise the Lord, victory was won there. And now as they continue to train, they haven't done anything wrong, they're not even in a position of leadership yet, they find out, oh, by the way, the king's sick of all the wise men, he's mad at them all, so you're going to die. Sorry. Right? That's pretty much it. Yeah, sorry. We'll go out next week. We'll attack some other country. We'll find some young people there, and we'll start over. Right? Because you're expendable. And so that's it. Sorry. And Daniel's like, wait. What is this about? Right? I'm paraphrasing now. What's this about? And they explain. And Daniel says, let me go in before the king and see if he'll give me an opportunity to talk to God and get an answer for this. And the king is desperate for an answer. What kind of dream must Nebuchadnezzar have had? I mean, we know what it is, right? We're going to get the interpretation. We're going to get the dream and the interpretation in just a minute. There it is. But how much did it trouble him? You ever been there? Anybody else? Am I the only one that dreams at night? You know? They're sometimes goofy. They're sometimes bizarre. They're sometimes troubling. Right? Troubling things. Sometimes they're vivid. Sometimes they're just weird. There have been times I've woken up and been bothered by it, but can't really remember what it even was. You know? But this was an extreme example of that. He's the king. Think of this. He's Nebuchadnezzar. He's been through some nasty battles. Ones that he started. Ones that he did. I mean, I'm trying to make it sound bad for him, but it was at his own, you know, desire. But he's been through some nasty things. He's seen some tough things in war. He probably has dealt with dreams before. He goes to bed this night. He wakes up. He is so troubled by the dream. And we know he's troubled by the dream because he's angry the next morning. He doesn't seem to give him any leeway, right? You're going to tell me the dream. If not, I'm going to cut you in pieces? I mean, sounds brutal, nasty, horrid. These are some men who I'm sure have served him for a long time. Some that have been faithful workers for him for, well, obviously this is only Nebuchadnezzar's second year of reign, but they've worked there in the palace for a number of years. And so now Nebuchadnezzar is saying, you tell me or else. Give me the dream. And he doesn't just want to know what the dream meant. He wants to know what the dream was because he can't even remember the dream, but it so troubled him, he has to know. So he's really upset about his dream. So Daniel goes, and Daniel prays to the God of heaven. We see the prayer in verse number 20. Verse 20, Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever. His wisdom and might are his. He, God, notice the capital letters there, right? He changeth the times and the seasons. He removeth kings and setteth up kings. He giveth wisdom unto the wise and knowledge to them that have understanding. He revealeth the deep and secret things. He knoweth what is in the darkness, and the light dwelleth in him. I thank thee and praise thee, O thou God of my fathers, who hath given me wisdom and might, and has made known unto me now what we desired of thee. For thou hast now made known unto us the king's matter. Therefore Daniel went in unto Arioch, whom the king had ordained, to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went in and said unto him, destroy not the wise men of Babylon. Bring me in before the king. I will show unto the king the interpretation. And so Daniel prays. God gives him the answer. God gives him the dream. And then God gives him what it means, the interpretation of the dream. I think I'm stating the obvious here. But these other wise men who did not know God, when in the past they had been asked to give an interpretation of a dream, were probably making it up, right? Right? I mean, they didn't really have an answer for that. They were like the people who read tarot cards and stuff today, right? They're just reading the room and telling the king what he wants to hear. Daniel's not doing that. Daniel's like, this very specifically was your dream, and this is exactly what it means. This is the answer that Daniel is going to give. Let's jump down into the dream for a minute. Again, just because of time. Verse 31. Thou, O king, sawest, and behold, thou sawest a great image. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before thee. The form thereof was terrible, or that really means dazzling or overwhelming. The image's head was of fine gold, its breast, its arms of silver, its belly, its thighs of brass, its legs of iron, its feet part of iron, part of clay. Thou sawest till that a stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon its feet that were of iron and clay, and brake them into pieces. Then was the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, the gold broken to pieces together and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors. The wind carried them away. There was no place for them. The stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. This is the dream. We will tell you the interpretation thereof before the king. And so he gives him this dream. Again, I just want to set the setting for a minute. The king was so troubled by the dream. And so by the end of verse number 35, we have all the information that Nebuchadnezzar knew but had forgotten, right? Daniel tells him what his dream was. But this dream, what we just read, so troubled him that had set him on a path of anger and possible destruction. He had signed death warrants for some of these poor men. And so we see an image. It was an overwhelming image. It was a large image that ends up, different stages of metal, we're going to talk about that, ends up getting destroyed, turning to dust, and blowing away. So at that point, it has disturbed Nebuchadnezzar, right? In his dream, let's step back to when he's sleeping or just waking up or tossing and turning. This is built into his mind and into his psyche, I don't know what this is, but it really bothered him. It really disturbed him. Is this me? Is this my kingdom? Are we being destroyed? Are we being blown away? What is this? He's very upset about this. Daniel has the interpretation thereof. And that's what's important for you and I to understand even today. Verse 37, thou, O king, art a king of kings, for the God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom, power, strength, and glory. Wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field, the fowls of the air, hath he given them into thine hand, and hath made thee ruler over them all. Thou art this head of gold. After thee shall arise another kingdom, inferior to thee. Just Nebuchadnezzar has to be feeling pretty good right now, right? Inferior to thee, another third kingdom of brass, which shall bear rule over all the earth. The fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, for as much as iron breaketh in pieces, subdueth all things, as iron that breaketh all these shall it break in pieces and bruise. Whereas thou sawest the feet and the toes, part of potter's clay, part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it of the strength of the iron, for as much as thou sawest the iron mixed with miry clay. The toes of the feet were part iron, part clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong, partly broken. Whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. And in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. A kingdom shall not be left to other people. It shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. We're going to stop right there time-wise at the end of verse number 44. He begins to give them an outline of what this statue looked like, and then all the different metals that were in it. I know this is somewhat small and probably a little hard to see here, but we'll use it. Head of gold was Babylon, right? That was Nebuchadnezzar. Daniel's talking to that person that's in front of him. So, Nebuchadnezzar, the one that we're talking about, Daniel's in the palace talking to him. So that is present. But everything else on this for Daniel and for Nebuchadnezzar is future. It's looking ahead. God's giving them the details. Now listen, God is not telling them which of these kingdoms are going to be, right? We know that looking back on it in past tense. We see the names of those kingdoms, the names of those kings in past tense. And that's really not argued in any commentary or any denomination. It's pretty much set. We know who they are. So let's talk about them real quick. We have Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon up there, number one. We have a chest of arms and silver, which becomes the kingdom of the Medes and Persians. Daniel will see that come to fruition in his life, right? Handwriting on the wall. Babylonian Empire will fall in Daniel's lifetime. He'll see the Medes and Persian Empire rise to prominence. Medes and Persian Empire will never be as great, never be as glorious, never be as strong as the Babylonian Empire. But it will follow the Babylonian Empire. It's the ones that ultimately brought Babylonian Empire down. So we have the Medes and Persians. The next one there, belly of thighs and of bronze. That's the kingdom of Greece. That's Alexander the Great and the Greek Empire. They're the ones that are the mid part of this. They're the next great empire to follow. Then we have the legs of iron. And it talked for a while about the iron. History refers to Rome as ruling with a iron fist. The word iron is used throughout Roman history. And so we know that the next great empire was the Roman Empire. And so now we're talking about down to the time of Jesus Christ, right? Jesus Christ born in the Roman Empire. And so Daniel is given the interpretation of a dream that was given to Nebuchadnezzar of the great empires that were to come. God knows who was coming next. So he talked about Babylon, Medes and Persians, Alexander the Great, the Greek Empire, and then the Roman Empire. These are the next four in the series. If you notice, as I read that, several verses then were given to the toes mixed with iron and clay. That's down there at the bottom. Feet of iron and clay. Well, which one's that? Well, that hasn't come to fruition yet. That's future and prophetic for you and me. We're still looking ahead to a revised or united Roman Empire. We see movement in those things in our world today. I'm 52 years old, right? And been in church all those years. But when the European Union first started to form, how many of our pastors at the time said, here it is, you know? Here's the revised Roman Empire. And it grew from whatever. I don't remember. I wasn't old enough. But, you know, 2 countries to 8 countries to 10 countries to 30 countries. We're like, well, you know, the Bible talks about 10. Now we see, more recently, some countries left the European Union, like Brexit, right? And so it's starting to change. What's that revised Roman Empire look like? I don't know, but I think we're close to it. I think we're seeing movement in that part of the world every day. And I think ultimately that comes to fruition when the Antichrist sets up his rule and reign in that part of the world. The Antichrist will rule over this revised Roman Empire. It's some 10-nation federation. The Bible talks about the fact they are kind of together, but they kind of don't get along that well either, right? Right? They're like iron and clay, and iron doesn't really mix with clay. And so there's some strength, and yet there's some fragileness to it as well. And so we see that. Think of the time frame that the Antichrist rules and reigns. Well, it's 7 years or less, right? It's not very long. It's a short period of time, but we see those things starting to line up in this age for sure. It talks about the last great kingdom, the stone, and we know that who the stone is. We call him the cornerstone in the church, right? We call him the stone. He's mentioned as the stone throughout Scripture. I think I have Psalm 118, Isaiah chapter 8, Isaiah chapter 28, Zechariah chapter 3, all refer to Jesus Christ as the stone. And so Jesus Christ comes and is the last great kingdom on earth. And the greatest of all, he destroys man's kingdoms and sets up his own permanent kingdom. That's verse number 44, which we just read. In the days of these kings, which ones? These 10 that have assembled themselves under the reign of the Antichrist, whoever they are, whatever 10 countries, whatever 10 alliances, whatever 10 unions have been put together, we don't know who all they are. But we see it starting to come together. In those days, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. We've seen that with all of these, right? Babylon, well, that was destroyed while Daniel was still there. The Medes and Persians, that was completely destroyed by the time Alexander the Great had taken over. And Alexander the Great, his reign didn't last that long before the Greek Empire fell to the Roman Empire. I had some time frame here. The Babylonian Empire stood for 66 years. Not that long. The Medes and Persians for 208. The Greeks for 185. And the Roman Empire stood for about 500 years. That's the time frame. But all of them are gone now. If you go over to Rome, you're looking at ruins, right? Rome and Italy aren't ruling anything anymore. Neither's Greece or the areas of Babylon and Persian Empire. They're gone. One last empire will raise. That's the one the Antichrist forms. It will be very short-lived when Jesus comes back and establishes his empire and his rule that will reign forever and ever. 1,000 years upon this earth, and then eternity to come after that. That's the picture given. That's the dream Nebuchadnezzar had. A dream that was so disturbing that he was willing to execute all of his wise men in order to try to get an answer of what the dream was and what it meant. It weighed heavily upon his mind. God gave Daniel the answer to the dream. And I haven't done enough justice tonight from the passage, but we looked at this a couple weeks ago when I preached. Over and over again, Daniel gave credit to God. Nebuchadnezzar wanted to give credit to Daniel, but Daniel kept deflecting the credit to God. God gave me this. God answered. And to the point that by the end of the passage, verse 46, Nebuchadnezzar fell on his face and worshiped Daniel and commanded that they should offer an oblation and sweet odors to him. But he got it right. Verse 47, the king answered unto Daniel and said, of a truth it is, your God is a God of gods and a Lord of kings, a revealer of secrets, seeing thou couldest reveal this secret. Daniel, in verse number 48 and 49, finds himself quickly promoted. Training period over. Daniel is now head of the wise men. He gets jobs for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, at verse 49. They're over the different provinces in Babylon, and Daniel sits in the king's gate. Daniel will have a position of prominence throughout the book of Daniel. Not an easy ride, right? He'll take a quick tour of the lion's den in the midst of this. But Daniel has a position of prominence and importance, but he gives all of the attention to God. And we'll see that again in the story of Daniel in the lion's den, when King Darius knows, truly your God could have saved you. Did he save you? Will he save you? And Daniel says, yes, my God, save me.
Thank you for listening to Redeemed. For more information, you can email us at pastorwesgunther@gmail.com. Thank you.